Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you guys? Everybody well? I woke up a little tired this morning. I don't know what it is. Everybody, my girls couldn't get them out of bed, or at least my little one. It's amazing how sitting all day can make you exhausted, right? It's a wonderful holy day yesterday, wouldn't you agree? Very fantastic. Everything seems so well put together. Really enjoyed it. I think it added having the wedding tomorrow. We had a lot of people visiting, so even felt more like a feast day. So it's, you know, you have, I won't call them strangers, but people that you don't see often or haven't ever met, but they don't seem like strangers. But it was good to see a nice young crowd of people here for the wedding, and we're all excited about that. Eric and I had to go back and forth. If you recall, I went way over ahead of him last time we spoke. He was afraid today to let me go first. I don't blame him. I never know from one to the next how long or how short I'm going to be. I feel like I'll be short today. Children are such a blessing in so many ways. So many ways, but as I've aged, I've realized that one of the most amazing things about children is how they have that special knack of pointing out your own flaws. And they don't know that they do that. They do it in correcting them. You see and witness your own humanity. You see things about yourself. At least I do. It's kind of ironic. I will catch myself. Recently, we had an encounter at the house. I won't mention which child it was, and it really wasn't an encounter. It was just me getting loud. But I was addressing a situation that had come up that really needed to be addressed. It needed to be addressed. And the first words out of the mouth was a self-justification thing, and then I exploded. And anyway, I quickly realized, well, that's going to be the topic of my split sermon because it applied to me equally as well as it did to my child. And anyway, humanity is a very strange bunch. I mean, you know, we are a mix. We're a concoction of both good and evil. I mean, that is how you would describe humanity. You can look around and you can see examples of people and you shake your head and you just think, what an extraordinary person. What an amazing person. What a good person they are. I mean, I never seem to feel like I can rise up to the level of goodness that you can witness in some people. And yet, you can also look on the other hand and you can see the most evil and arbitrary acts of hatred. And sometimes those can come out of the same people. The same people can be really, really good, yet have some very evil thoughts and ideas. But we're able to witness both of those things as we look around at humanity. As we look within ourselves, we'll see both of those things at times. People are all created in God's image, but in so much variety. As we heard yesterday, that's not necessarily the physical image, is it? It's a spiritual image. We're created in the God of the God kind. Just we heard in the second sermon. But so much variety in humanity. Yet we all share a common flaw. We all share many common flaws. But this one I'm going to speak about today, I think most of humanity shares that flaw. And that is that we tend to judge ourselves against other people. We tend to always look at other people to judge ourselves. That becomes our standard of measure. Sometimes we judge ourselves against ourselves. We become our own standard of measure. And then we condemn everybody else because they don't rise up to our standard. But most often we judge ourselves by other people around us. I suspect we all do it. I don't know that we all do it, but I recognize that I do it. And I know my children do it. First words out of their mouth. Well, I can name 30 kids that are worse than me. They're all worse than me. You're on me, but they're worse than me. Don't you understand? I am good. I am good. You don't know how good I am. I'm superbly good compared to other kids. It's so funny because even as I was writing this sermon, working on this sermon, I caught myself doing the exact same thing that my kids do. And it had to do with a skirt, of all things. I was asked to sit in judgment of the length of a skirt. That skirt appears too short. No, that skirt's fine. I've seen the girls with the short skirts. I know what a short skirt is. That skirt's perfectly fine. But I was using the standard of other children. We were at a swim banquet. We've gone several years to a banquet where the other high school kids show up. And I'm appalled at the skirts. So I've been conditioned by those around me to go, wow, well, if it's, you know, if cheeks aren't hanging out, it's fine. I don't. But I catch myself judging based on what other people do. And I think we all do that. We judge based on what other people do. I compare my daughters to their peer group. And sometimes I compare them to myself, which is equally bad. Equally bad. So what we do, we use the flaws. We use other flaws, other imperfect examples around us to measure our own growth. We use other flawed examples to measure our development, to measure our own improvement, to measure our own righteousness. And in a proverbial sense, that's very much like apples and oranges, isn't it? Because no two people are the same. No two people are the same in so many ways. I mean, of all the billions of people that have ever lived, and I don't know this, I'm speculating on this, but I'm pretty sure there are no two people that have ever lived that are exactly the same. There's no two people identical physically, size, shape, or intellectually. Everybody's mind is different. No two people have the same talents exactly. Personality or character. That's what makes us different. We have the ability to develop character based on our social environment, based on the culture in which we live, the communities in which we grow up. A European is very different than an American. We're both Caucasian. We descended from them, but their culture is different than our culture. They're very different than we are. And you can say that for every nationality. We're very different. An American is an American. And they're going to be different than other Caucasians. So we are affected by the environment around us. We're affected by the people around us. We're all uniquely different. And we are each, before God, individually responsible for our development, our growth, under those circumstances. Under those circumstances. Everybody lives under different circumstances. They come from different families, different backgrounds, and their circumstances are different. So to judge one person against any other standard by another person is an apple and orange judgment. To some degree. From a human perspective. So, with this as a background, with that perspective, and having just completed the feast days, it was mentioned yesterday, I think it was mentioned the first holy day, there's a measurement that we do during this time. We're told to analyze ourselves, look at ourselves. We're told to measure ourselves. Mr. Petty, I was afraid he was going to walk all over the topic because he has a way of just getting everything out there in such fantastic form, but measuring up. I used that term yesterday, measuring up. Measuring up. We look at ourselves to see, do we measure up? Do we measure up? And so how does God measure us? If we're going to look at ourselves and say, how do we measure up? We have to know what standard by which God wants us to measure. And it's certainly not your neighbor beside you. We don't measure ourselves according to the neighbor down the street or the person sitting beside you today, even your own spouse. You can't measure your own progress against your spouse. I'm bad, but I'm not as bad as her. My dad, many of you knew, some of you knew my dad. My dad was a machinist. My dad was a, he, machinists cut, you know, they make parts, they make metal parts. A machinist uses lathes and mills and even grinders at times to get to that fine measurement. But he dealt in tens of thousandths of an inch. He measured thinner than hair. And he cut thinner than hair. I mean, and so for that reason, anytime you worked with my dad, it was precision. And anything that he ever constructed or made was precision. And in my career, I've kind of followed the same pattern. Some of you know, one of my professions is surveying. And I'm kind of a Pharisee when it comes to measurements. I'm very picky about measurement because that's my life. My life is built around specification of measurement. Each situation requires a different type of measurement. Many people here are builders. They work or have worked in the construction industry. So Jason and them, Kurt, I know they have these machines. They program them to cut to high precision. But when they're doing that, they have to have a standard by which to measure. You know, one guy can't go out there and measure with a stick and come back and say it was 34 sticks long. And I need you to cut that. No, there has to be a standard measure that they work by. So God has a standard measure. And we have to have standard measures. When you perform your job, when you are building something, you have to start from the same place. Everyone on that construction site starts from the same place. As a surveyor or engineer in my profession, I have that. There's one site down in Smyrna, it's a hotel site. Well, every bit of construction on that project all goes back to my original measure. I establish the boundary. I establish the benchmark. Everything that is constructed is built from that benchmark. So every time we go back to that project, every time you relay out that foundation, everything goes back to that standard measure. And without standard measure, there would be no construction, would there? There would be no building. There'd be no development. It's very similar in God's family. God has to have a standard measure. Everybody has to start from the same point. If you would, let's look at 1 Corinthians 3. 1 Corinthians 3, verse 10. Thank you, Eric. I'll have to remember to say that. 1 Corinthians 3, starting in verse 10. Writing here says, according to the grace of God which was given to me, as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation. And another builds on that. And this is right after the argument about who is the greater, Apollos or Paul, I follow one, I follow the other. They were trying to measure each other from different standards, weren't they? And they weren't using God's standard, they were using a human standard. They were saying, well, Apollos is greater. He's the true measure. He's a better example to follow. We'll follow him. We'll follow Paul. Paul's saying, look, I've laid a foundation and another builds on it. He says, but let each one take heed how he builds on that foundation. For no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. He's saying Christ is the foundation. That's the starting point. All measurement. If you're going to measure your righteousness, or you're going to measure from the same starting point. Scripturally, Christ is referred to as what? The cornerstone. Often he's referred to as the cornerstone. In ancient construction, that would have been your start of measure. Everything would have been laid out from the cornerstone. Once it is set, that would have been where everything built from. And that is where what Paul is saying. For no other foundation can anyone build or lay than that which is laid, which is Christ Jesus. Now, if anyone builds on this foundation with gold or silver or precious stones or wood, hay or straw, basically whatever we do, whatever work we perform, each one's work will become clear. For the day will declare it, because it will be revealed by fire, and the fire will test each one's work of what sort it is. And if anyone's work which he has built on it endures, he will receive a reward. So we're all building. We're starting at the same point, and we're all building. But we're all different in how we build. But we all have to start at the same point. And if it's an enduring work, if it has value, then we will receive a reward. If anyone's work is burned, he will suffer loss, but he himself will be saved, yet so as through fire. So their work is being tested. And you can say, well, how do they test? Is everyone's work tested equally? Well, we know that to be true. If you look at 1 Peter 1:17, Peter says that we know that with God, he does not judge partially. He judges everyone equally, meaning he judges based on the same standard. He measures our progress based on the same standard. So there's no impartial judgment with God. I mean, let's go back and look at that. I didn't write that all down, but I think that is an interesting set of scripture. In 17. And just start in verse 15. It adds more emphasis than me just kind of paraphrasing and rambling. Verse 15 says, "But as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct. Because it is written, be holy for I am holy." Be holy for I am holy. That's the standard. Christ is holy, and that's where we start from. "And if you call on the Father who without partiality judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves throughout the time of your sojourning here in fear, knowing that you are not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ as a lamb without blemish and without spot." So Christ being our standard that we build from, we go on from there. We build on that foundation. You know, when we think in terms of judging ourselves by other people, and things aren't always what they seem, are they? Things are not always what they seem. I mean, sometimes we could sit here and say, well, I'm so glad I'm not like those poor Africans. You know, they have nothing. You know, how could you obey God? You know, when you have nothing, when you're starving, and what a terrible thing. But the Africans look at their life and they think, well, we seek God's kingdom every day because we have nothing else. So from that perspective, they have an easier way than we do. And we can look at the wealthy, go to the opposite extreme and look at the wealthy people. And you think, oh man, I want to be awesome to be a wealthy person. But we know from the scriptures that being wealthy is a very difficult thing. It's very difficult to find a wealthy person who follows God. It's a very difficult way to be wealthy and try to follow God. What if you're an extremely attractive person? A lot of people want to compare themselves to other people. Wouldn't it be great to be a great, attractive, you know, strapping, big... No, it wouldn't, because you have more pressure in your life. There's more challenges for people who are great-looking because they, obviously, there's vanity and pride and people hitting on them. That would be a challenge, I would think. I always laugh. I think about when I was in high school, and I think, you know, I'm like, how do you survive high school with all of those pressures and stuff? And I'm like, I didn't have any pressures. I couldn't have got a date if I begged for a date. I'd had to pay for a date to get a date when I was in high school. I did not date in high school. I mean, I'm like, you know, I didn't grow up till I was out of high school. I mean, literally didn't grow. So I couldn't have bought a date. I didn't have that many pressures in high school. Mine were just redneck pressures, drinking and carrying up. But I didn't have those pressures. But I think about that. I think, what if I'd have been, you know, a big, strapping, good-looking jock in high school? Would my life have turned out the same? Knowing my character, I'd say no. So that was a blessing that I didn't have that. But, you know, I could have... You could kind of judge yourself, you know, look at yourself compared to somebody like that and think, oh, they've got it great. They've got it made. No, but there's more pressure there. It's harder on them. What about people with handicaps? What about people with a handicap? I had a conversation recently with a friend who has a handicapped child. If a person has a handicap, we tend to feel sorry for them, don't we? But does God see it that way? And from God's perspective, He might have given them a gift, because they will appreciate their life maybe more, possibly. Maybe they'll appreciate their life more. But things aren't always what they appear. So we have to be very careful how we, you know, desire something else, and, you know, and how we judge ourselves compared to other people. Because, again, individuality. There are challenges in every person's life. They're just different challenges. Let's look at 1 Corinthians. I think we were just there and I left. Yeah. Let's go over, go back to 1 Corinthians 1. This is really what it comes down to when we have that tendency to judge ourselves by other people. Let me change that. Let's go to 2 Corinthians 10. I apologize for that. I skipped over something here. This is a situation where Paul was being judged somewhat for his appearance and the way he spoke and his harshness. You know, he wrote to the Corinthian church very boldly, and then when he shows up, they say, well, you come here and you're meek and you're not really the same guy. And anyway, he was addressing their comments. Apparently, they were comparing him to some false teachers. And he addresses that in 2 Corinthians 10, verse 12. 2 Corinthians 10, verse 12, Paul writes, "For we dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves. But they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, are not wise." They were basically setting, apparently there were those that were setting themselves as the standard. And they were saying, you guys need to be like us. And Paul, through there, always was pointing back to Christ as the standard. He was saying, I never held myself up as the standard. I commended you always to Christ. I always follow Him. But apparently others were not. And he was basically trying to point that fact out. I wasn't trying to set myself up as a standard, but apparently others were. And we can do that at times, particularly to ourselves. We can set ourselves up as a standard. But to measure ourselves against any human standard is flawed. It's flawed. It's full of imperfections. It's like it's like I said, it's like trying to go out and build and not going back to that original cornerstone, not going back to that original benchmark. Because if you go out there and everybody starts building from a different spot, you're going to have a chaos. And that would be a similar situation. People can't set up a standard that's not the same. So God judges everyone from the very same spot. It's dangerous for us to, as Paul wrote, measure themselves or measure ourselves against other people. It's not wise. I like how he just puts it. It's not wise. Definitely not wise. Now, if we would, let's go back. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 26. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 26. And for us here, this is kind of where it boils down to. And we know this. This is all just a repeat. Just a repeat. 1 Corinthians 1, 26. It says, "For you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish of the world to put to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty. And the base things of the world and the things which are despised, God has chosen. And the things which are not, to bring to nothing the things that are." It's basically, I'm taking something that's just essentially nothing, and I'm going to create something incredible out of it. And then those things that appear to be incredible, those things that appear to be what we would want to have, he's going to make those irrelevant. The things that we make important in this life are going to become irrelevant. They're already becoming irrelevant, and they should be irrelevant. They're not things of the spiritual. They're physical things. 29, that no flesh should glory in his presence. That no flesh, there's nothing of the flesh that is worthy of glory in the presence of God. But of him you are in Jesus Christ, who became for us wisdom from God and righteousness and sanctification and redemption. That, as it is written, he who declares, let him glory in the Lord. So we can never set ourselves up as a standard of measure. I can't ask my kids to do what I did, be like me. That would be horrible. I don't want them to be like me. But when I compare, when we compare ourselves to other people, we're either setting ourselves up as the standard and judging them, or we're setting them up as a standard and trying to achieve to them. And that's not right. It's just not right. It's not wise, as Paul wrote. We need to set Christ as the standard from which we measure ourselves. I've often said that sometimes our greatest weakness or our greatest strength can actually be our greatest weakness. And that's so much the way it is in humanity. The things that we're really, really good at can become our origin of sin in our lives. And I thought it was funny the last couple of times that Mr. Kellers has spoke, he's made fun of himself because he likes to use big words. And he would say something like, "Well, that makes me better," or whatever. I mean, but that's human nature. That's the way we are. I mean, I thought it was interesting that he was pointing that out. But I do. If you think back about the first Holy Day, and Mr. Kellers basically went through a sermon where he compared humility to pride, and he asked a simple question: what are the two greatest examples of the opposite ends of the spectrum on humility? And of course, I know that most of us don't answer, but we all knew the answer, right? I mean, so Christ being obviously the example for humility. And Satan, of course, being the example for pride. But you got to understand, I think we're given so much explanation of who Satan was. Created perfect. I mean, God admits, I created him perfect. I made him perfect. There was no flaw in him. There was absolutely no flaw. He was beautiful. He sang beautifully. He had all talents. He had basically, he was God's right-hand guy, right there at the throne. He had him. Well, that became his greatest weakness, didn't it? His perfection was his weakness. He was perfect in all his ways. Yet that became his weakness. We can fall into the same problems. I've often struggled with the idea of there's a certain amount of pride that's good. I mean, pride in your work and pride in what you do. Sometimes it's called, there's a tenacity. There's a certain willingness to work hard. What's some other words I would use for that? I think I had them written in here. Self-sufficiency. Are you a real self-sufficient person? Able to handle everything on your own? Persistent. You're a very persistent person. I'll work at it until I get it right. I'll get this worked out myself. That's persistence. Independent. I'm fiercely independent. See, in society, those are all good things, right? You've heard that term, fiercely independent. It's used to describe young women sometimes. All of those things can be really, really, really dangerous. Really dangerous things. They translate into stubbornness, which I have a real problem with. I mean, that was the problem with the children of Israel. They were stubborn. And God had to beat them over the head constantly. Bam! Bam! Got to stop the stubbornness. Can you people yield? If you feel the need to work it out yourself, maybe God will someday bless you with a trial that gives you a trial you can't work out yourself. And there's nothing you can do about it. But see, Christ was the opposite, wasn't he? Christ was the complete opposite. This is a guy who was with God for eternity, was God, had the ability to remain God. Yeah, he chose to give that up. He chose willingly, I will give up being a God to please my Father. It's why the Greeks couldn't comprehend it. It's why it's called foolishness in the Bible. They refer to the gospel as foolishness to the Greeks. It was blasphemy, really, to the Jews, but it was foolishness to the Greeks. They couldn't comprehend. No. Gods don't give up their godness. There wouldn't be a God if they gave up their godness. So that's a foolish story. I can't listen to it. They rejected it. He chose to give it up so that he could take a bunch of nothing. As Paul described this as nothing, because he's going to take nothing and make it something. And he's going to take something and make it nothing. So he took a bunch of nothing. Christ came to take a bunch of nothing and make something great out of it. To his Father's glory. To the glory of his Father. And it's interesting that when he accomplished great things, it was when he was at his very weakest. You think about the temptation of Christ. He literally did not have the physical strength to hold himself up. But that was his, other than his actual sacrifice, that was his strongest moment. When he gave up his independence, or he gave up his own tenacity, you might say. He might have had tenacity. I mean, after all, he was God in the flesh. He probably had some power. He certainly had knowledge. He had everything. I mean, let's face it. He said he can call legions of angels. There was nothing he didn't have. But he laid it all on the line. Every single ounce of energy he had, he laid it on the line. And his all of his power, all of his might was God's. And it's not his. He became miraculously strong when he laid it all out on the line. And through that, at the same time, it's sacrifice. He literally had to be beaten to death and die to perform the greatest miracle on earth. He defeated Satan. He defeated evil. And we know that he through that process, will defeat death. He defeated the enemies of God through simply giving everything up, letting go of everything. Everything. So, if we, as the days of unleavened bread, feast of unleavened bread represented, if we allow that bread in us, that body, if we allow that mind in us, if we allow Him to live in us, then that power of God will also be perfected in us. He'll be perfected in our weaknesses. If we allow ourselves to be surrendered, if we surrender to God, to Christ living in us, we surrender our lives, He lives in us, we have that same power. It's the attitude of surrender that gives you strength. I loved Mr. Petty's sermon yesterday. The idea of being slaves. Yeah. I just thought it was, this is fantastic. But, you know, we still hold on to things. We still hold on to things we can't let go. We won't let go. The cross can't fully, you know, you can't take, if you can't get that out, He can't fill it. He can't fill that spot. But God's strength is perfected in our weakness. And it is through Him that we can do all things. We have to remember that. It is through Him that we do all things. Let's look at Amos 7. I'm going to close with a couple of scriptures. I'm going to go back to why, kind of go all the way back to the beginning. Amos 7. Amos 7, verse 7. Sorry. Amos 7, verse 7. Speaking of the children of Israel. Thus he showed me, behold, the Lord stood on a wall made with a plumb line. The wall was made straight, obviously. Made with a plumb line, and he stood with a plumb line in his hand. Now, for those of you who don't know what a plumb line is basically a heavy weight on the end of a string. It's used to check verticality, basically, or verticalness. It will always hang straight down, right? Unless you had a really amazing wind. And it's also used in construction to mark the beginning point of something. So you hang that string down, and it's a precise point. A plumb, they call it a bob. The weight is a bob, and it hangs on the bottom of the string, and it goes to a specific point. But that plumb line is used to measure. It is a standard by which contractors measure. It's where they begin. It's a plumb line. So he stood, the Lord stood on the wall with a plumb line in his hand. And the Lord said to me, Amos, what do you see? And I said, a plumb line. And then the Lord said, behold, I am setting a plumb line in the midst of my people Israel. And I will not pass by them, or I will not overlook them. I will not overlook their transgressions anymore. This was a turning point for the nation of Israel. And this theme carries on into the New Testament as well. And we can go to the end of the story and read a similar verse. If you would like to turn there, you may. Revelation 11, verse 1. Revelation 11, verse 1. In my business, we do things called as-built surveys. And basically what we do is we're going behind a contractor and we check to make sure that what they constructed was what was designed. So we do it an as-built. We measure the final product to make sure that everything was put in according to correct measures. So it will work. That it's on, the building's on the lot at the right spot, that everything is at the right elevation, that everything will work appropriately. Cities require those. They want to make sure that essentially they're getting what they approved. This is kind of a description of an as-built. And this is at the end time when, anyway, Revelation 11 verse 1. Then I was given a reed like a measuring rod. Kind of like that stick we talked about earlier. And the angel stood saying, rise and measure the temple of God, the altar, and those who worship there. Now the temple of God. The temple of God, as we know, I'll even jot down a reference, 2 Corinthians 3:16. We think we all know that, 2 Corinthians 3:16. The temple of God is the church. We, both collectively and individually, are the temple of God. So we're being measured. This is at the end time. We are being measured. The altar, most commentaries would agree, represents those works that they were talking about, the sacrifices. Because they knew the dimensions. See, this is not a real temple, not a real altar that they're measuring. They knew that, you know, they've known forever what the dimensions of the temple, what the dimensions of the altar are. So they're not talking about physical dimensions. They're talking about more spiritual issues. Rise and measure the people of God. Rise and measure the works of those people, the sacrifices of those people. And those who worship there, again, the people. So I think maybe the first one is the church and maybe the second is the individual. Maybe you're looking collectively as a church, individually. I don't know. See, we're all being measured. We're all being measured. Fortunately for us, God measures without partiality. He starts at the same spot for all of us. You know, the scripture says the judgment on the house of God is now. We're being measured now. Being measured now. But we have a real danger if we make the basis of our measurement something that's faulty, something that's wrong, has flaws. Because when this time comes, if we've based our growth, if we've based our righteousness, if we've based our production, if you want to call it that, on the wrong standard, then we're in trouble. We would be in trouble at this time. There's nothing else we can base it on. In closing, Ephesians 4:13, if you would, if you don't mind. Ephesians 4:13. See, we have a responsibility to check ourselves. And isn't it a great blessing that each year we have the Feast of Unleavened Bread? That we have a time where we're told, measure yourselves. check yourselves. Do you measure up? Do you measure up? Ephesians 4:13, till we all come to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. That's the measure that we have to measure ourselves to, the fullness of Christ. We all need to strive for that this year. As Eric mentioned, we can strive to put God's law in our hearts and our minds. The next holy day is even more inspiring than the previous, I think. What a fantastic thing to look forward to. I mean, the rest of the year is just, it's exciting. But we can't compare ourselves to those around us.